Hey, stupid nerds. You're listening to the best of the Boogie Monster, but I tell you what, I'll save you an hour. Cut to the chase. There ain't no abominable snowman. There ain't no Sasquatch. What you saw was probably like a dog rooting through the trash. All right? So sit back and enjoy what they're calling the best of the Boogie Monster. Basically, a repackaged rerun is what you're doing. You'll eat it up. You love it. You love all these fake stories about fake things that never happened and never will. And Kyle and Dave, they're just stringing you along. They're out there hustling their buns off, doing their stand-ups and whatever. So why don't you listen to an encore presentation, i.e. a stupid rerun of their podcast, which I can't even get in my car because they don't release podcasts on cassette tape.
Poor Carl. He's so angry. What's up, everybody? It is the Boogie Monster. It's me, Dave. Merry Christmas! Yeah, got a special treat for you today. Best of the Boogie Monster Christmas edition. Kyle's been traveling abroad. I've been all over the place. Didn't have time to knock out our normal, regular nonsense for you, so we've repackaged this for you. Dropping it a day early as well. I like Christmas Eve day almost more than Christmas itself. The anticipation is sometimes greater than the event. Hope you guys are having a good holiday season so far, whatever it is you're getting into. Hope you're having some relaxing times with your friends and family. So yeah, man, our little gift to you. Please enjoy this repackaged nonsense that we call Best of the Boogie Monster. And if you listen closely, you might even hear a few nice little stocking stuffers that I've thrown in there for you. Oh yes, indeed. So without further to-do, Best of the Boogie Monster, Christmas edition. Let's get into it.
And what happens in this room?
One fella who tried to get into the show without paying by announcing to the door guy he worked for the local paper and he hasn't paid for a show in 15 years.
Yeah.
Got in, sat in front, heckled, got kicked out. Yeah, It happens out there in the world, guys, and I'm not saying nobody's above it. It's just a circumstance. You know, some people, they don't go to see live comedy very often, and the behavior is like, well, you guys like drinking, so we like drinking, so we'll get super shit-faced before the show. And then there's, you know, there's kind of rules that go along with the comedy show that they don't adhere to. But so I got on stage. I got kicked out while I was on, and then Dave had some words with him.
Well, we didn't know. Like, before the show, we heard the security guys were like, hey, some jackass tried to get in without paying, said, quote, I haven't paid for a show in 15 years. And we both were like, well, fuck that guy, whoever he is. And
you know what the easiest way to get into a show without paying is just find the person on the show going, listen, I don't have 25 bucks. Can I come see the show? And I'm just be like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, none of you had to buy tickets for this. So, just one direct Facebook message, you could have all gotten in for free. So quote me on that next time I'm in Portland.
So we hear that some dude tried to get in without paying, and we're like, oh, wow, that's crazy. And then
the entitlement.
Yeah. During my set, some jackass just heckled. Like, not heckled, but, you know, like, answers all the rhetorical questions. It's like, yeah, okay, yeah, that's enough. I got it. So just interrupts me. I deal with it. Interrupts him. Like, yours was a lot longer. You handled it much better than
now
I did.
I engaged.
But then he gets kicked out, and then the security guys tell me, like, oh, that's the guy. And I'm like, oh, shit. I wish I'd have known that was the same guy while he was heckling me, because yeah, you know, that could have been a lot more fun.
And the guy who complained about it still paid to get in, then sat in the front row and was a dick. And he was like, all right, you know, nobody needs to, you know, all the low-hanging fruit jokes about whatever kind of Northwestern hippies you have here, but just, you know, the stereotypical, like, just like, what are you gonna? He had the man bun, and he had a, which, I mean, that's already, it's already passe to complain about that, but had like the hemp jewelry that was so dirty it just looked like old shoelaces. And just an overall hippie vibe, which was strange for how aggressive he entitled he was, yeah, about everything else.
Well, hippie look, but not hippie vibe.
Yeah,
real,
yeah,
aggro dipshit vibe.
Yeah.
So anyway, once I realized that that's the same dude, I connected the dots. Once he got kicked out, I had to go out and just see what his deal was.
Dave don't take no shit.
I had to get a closer look at this idiot. And Kyle's still on stage.
It's not street justice, Dave, until it's in the streets.
I had to get an up close look at this guy again.
Loving in the sheets, justice in the streets.
So Kyle's still on stage, and as soon as I walk out, he's talking to somebody else. He's like trying to develop allies out there, and he's like, those fucking guys this and those fucking guys that. I didn't even do anything wrong. And as soon as I walked out, I just went, I know what you did wrong. And that set him off. He was very, well, fuck you. Like, well, okay, you know, fuck you, maybe. 250 people on the show, one asshole gets kicked out. Oh, it's the same asshole that tried to get in without paying. And so we have words, and we scheduled a fight. And
you went full 3 o'clock high. I'm
okay. Yeah, yeah. And I like to think that I'm past that part of my life.
You're not.
That I'm fighting strangers.
You are in the thick of that part of your life.
I don't revel in that. I'm not a violent. I don't. I'm a defender.
You
want to
punch coyotes? Coyotes have done nothing to you.
I'm very approachable. I'm not a bully. I was just, you know, I just, injustice happens and I'm there to document it. And so we sketched, he was like, well, let's fucking go. And I'm like, well, you know, out of respect to my buddy who's still on stage, no, I'm not going to engage you in a fist fight.
Yeah, I deserve
during
respect.
The show. And so we scheduled a fight. I was like, well, hey, buddy, if you're here after the show, we'll figure this out. And sure enough.
Well, all right, so we're loading out, and the setting was perfect because the exit for the venue was this, it was an alleyway between a bar and the venue we were at, and it just rained, so the floor was the alleyway was just shimmering, reflecting light, like perfect, like this is where shit goes down, like just cinematic. And the dude came out of the bar across the alley, and Dave was exiting the venue, and I was posted up on the sidelines, which you should know, the sidelines was me just leaning against our budget rent-a-car white VW Bug Turbo. Which I did not request. I just get this shit like, give me a Nissan Versa. And the guy at the rental car place is like, well, do you have luggage? I'm like, yeah, we got luggage. I'm renting a car for 7 days. I got luggage. There's two of you? I'm like, yeah, why is this a big deal? Give me just whatever shitty car will fit in the car. We're not like oddly obese individuals. And we just have luggage. You're a thick fella, but you're fine, Dave. Yeah. You need to get over yourself.
Not quite yet.
You're a shapely fella to a lot of different people in this world. But then the guy at budget's like, all right, it's a two-door. I'm like, a two-door? When are we getting sexy? And we got a white VW Beetle Turbo that I'm just leaning against watching Dave and this yogurt ogre have words. Like, ooh, it's going down.
But I wasn't empty-handed.
No, well, that was, okay, so, you know, there's that chit-chat before a fight where nobody knows if it's going to develop into a fight or if it's just a lot of, you know, a lot of posturing, a lot of pageantry. That fucking, oh, fuck you, fucking, come on, let's go, right here, let's go, where, right here, you know, like all the fight words. Somebody had gifted us freshly baked apple pie.
Beautiful. Had the lattice work. Oh. Had the, not just some store-bought shit. Like, it had oh, boy, it was nice.
I like that you knew that even before, like, you looked into the pie. Like, it was covered with foil.
Oh, no, I
but you eyeballed it before we even left the venue.
So that would be so easy to poison, by the way. Because if you give me some shit, I'm going to fucking eat it.
That's why I think you'd be difficult to poison. You've eaten everything. Like, you're just like a cat that eats an old bird. You're like, you'll crawl under the porch for a couple days, but you'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm resilient.
What's that sound? It's Dave yakking up some poison. He'll be all right. He just got bad guts for about 72 hours. He'll be okay.
It'll pass. Let him work it through.
Just caught a bit of the plague. He'll be all right. But so Dave's like making the fight words, like, I'll fucking fuck you up right now, holding a pie, just holding a homemade pie flat in his hand. And like, all right, you know when a fight goes from the language of a fight to the choreography, the prelude choreography, into like, oh, it's happening now. And it happened so quick. And it happened because I knew you. It started with you where the guy said something where you're like, it's on. And I knew it was on because you dropped the pie. But he flat dropped it. He pulled his hand out flat from underneath it so the pie would fall flat. Like, you still didn't sacrifice the pie.
No, I'm not going to waste a pie over this dipshit.
No. He flat dropped it like the tablecloth trick. Like, I'm still not going to screw things up. And I'm watching from the car, and I was like, oh, the crust. I was just worried.
I had to free up my hands.
He had to free you up because it was go time.
Yeah. Well, and plus, we had already made friends with the staff that had some security guys.
Everybody
there
was out
that
there.
Were
nobody
very nice.
Was gonna
but I had already, you know, gotten chummy with the security guys before all this. And when this all happened, they were like, you know, come on, man. I'm like, and I was like, oh, no, seriously, man, I'm not going to. Hey, fuck you, man. Like, and I felt more bad that I betrayed the trust of the security staff. But
I thought the most beautiful part was not only that you dropped the pie, but that the guy you were going to fight recognized it, that, like, oh, it is go time. And his power fight move was to kick off his flip-flops.
Yeah. That's a real intimidating gesture.
Oh, we're going? All right. And then shook off his sandals.
Well,
in the cold, wet alley, like that was gonna help him. And one of them got stuck on his foot, so he had to shake a tail feather. He really had to hokey pokey that thing off for a minute. It was like a cat with scotch tape on its paw. But anyway, that was Bellingham, Washington.
Oh, and he did me a favor by turning his rings inside out.
Oh, yeah. I'll even turn my rings around. Yeah. And that was a 10-minute process.
Yeah. Yeah, and multiple rings.
Yeah.
And he's turning them around.
Because how many pagan symbols do you have to have on each knuckle?
But, yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah.
But it fizzled out, and then we made a getaway in our fancy European vehicle.
It's got sport mode. We hauled ass. It was a cool exit, and we went to Denny's.
Hey, Mueller junkies.
Are you having a tough time navigating the twists and turns of the Trump-Russia investigation?
So to be clear, you want easily digestible and succinct reporting on the Mueller investigation?
That's what he said. That's obviously what our position is.
It's time you check out Mueller, She Wrote.
Mueller, She Wrote is a weekly podcast where three female comics take a deep dive into the most consequential investigation in modern political history.
I'm your host, AG, and I have to remain anonymous because I work for Trump's executive branch. Join me, along with Jaleesa Johnson and Jordan Coburn, as we report the facts, break exclusive news, and bring it all to you with just the right amount of snark.
Then we top it off with our Fantasy Indictment League, exclusive interviews from guests including Asha Rangappa, Chris Cluey, Rabia Oshadri, and Scott Stedman, followed by conjecture, all while we speculate on who is...
Fucked. So tune in for consistent updates and reliable coverage on Manafort, Cohen, the Trump family, Russia, and everything Mueller, and make Mondays great again.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Mueller She Wrote. And check out our website at MuellerSheWrote.com. You'll be glad you did.
Listen to me a minute. You try not to worry Mama today.
Something wrong, John Boy?
Well, she's got a lot on her mind.
Like what?
Well, Daddy promised he'd be home early today, and he's not here yet.
Daddy, he'll get here. You know he'll get here.
Well, sure he will. But first he's got to pick up his paycheck, get it cash, and take a bus to Charlottesville, and take another bus to Hickory Creek. And from there, he's got to hitchhike 6 miles. It's going to take a while.
Sure.
Meanwhile, let's get this wood in the house so we'll have a nice warm fire when he gets here.
I can go ahead and tell that other story that I've been sitting on for a few months if you want me to, about my summer.
Oh, yeah. You want to add to...
All right. I'll go ahead since we're talking about weird luck.
But let's recap about
this all summer. Happened in 6 weeks.
And this was...
This was my summer.
Yeah. We can talk about this.
I can't go into great detail, but I can get the broad strokes of this particular story. All right, to recap, in a 6 week period this summer, my father died completely unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. Nobody saw that coming. Not, you know, I've talked in length about it, but it wasn't a long drawn out thing. Just talking to him on Thursday, and on Sunday he's dead. Okay, we'll deal with that, Jake. So handle that there, Big
I'm
D.
Sorry to laugh, man, but this list sucks. I know this list, and it sucks.
So that's strike one of my summer. Again, all within about 5.5-6 weeks.
Yeah, you had a cursed summer. A
few weeks later, as I've explained on the show, every penny to my name is hacked and stolen out of my account.
Yeah.
Not one of my accounts, not some of my funds.
No.
My only account, all my funds.
Oh, you don't have that $600 diversified through investments, Dave? You don't have some of that in a shelter account in the Bahamas?
So, and then as reported a few weeks ago, finally got that back 58 days later. And this is something I couldn't tell due to legal reasons. And I'll just, I'll be vague about it.
Wasn't there other stuff in there, too? Smaller bullshit, maybe?
Smaller stuff?
I don't know. It was.
Who would know with these three? So my dad dies. All my money's gone for 2 months. And then, remember when I was telling you around my birthday that we went up to this cabin?
Yeah.
Up in Lake Arrowhead.
Yeah.
And it's Katie's father's cabin.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful cabin right on the lake.
Just
typical little A-frame log cabin style, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, nice big porch. Very, very rustic.
I mean, I know what's coming.
A lot of great detail.
Did they have it for long?
They had it for about 3 years.
Okay.
But a lot of detail was put into this cabin as far as, like, it's a nice little second mountain home, little vacation home. And I spent about 2 weeks up there.
Yeah.
And just grieving, still in the grieving process from my dad, and just unwinding, and just had a real good time at this cabin. Went fishing, a lot of fishing, a lot of barbecuing, a lot of smoking of meats.
Yeah.
And
what happened, Dave?
Can't go into exact detail, but the cabin burned down. Not like it caught on fire a little bit. Burned to the ground. 2 hours after we left.
I was going to say, what time did the cabin burn down?
We left at noon on, let's just hypothetically call it August 5th. And then it's about a 2-hour drive back to Los Angeles. And about 2 p.m., literally, I'm not exaggerating, literally, as we're pulling into the apartment, literally, we're on the grounds of our apartment. Katie gets a phone call from a neighbor. Hey, just so you know, your dad's house is gone. Burned to the ground.
Can you not go into more details past that?
Well, lawsuits and arson investigations, and I'm not going to say.
There's lawsuits?
Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of stuff going on.
Oh, boy.
I was up there for 2 weeks. It was such a nice cat. I was so flabbergasted that her dad was like, sure, my daughter's idiot boyfriend, y'all go hang out and have fun. And just when we're leaving, like, that thing, we cleaned it, spotless, found it like you left it. Oh, God, is that where that went? Oh, let's clean this out, make it perfect. 2 hours later, the fucking thing's done. Like, to the ground, gone.
I would think they would have a better fire response team in an area where, like, forest fires and stuff are at risk.
You would think. And, of course, the guy who loves to barbecue, and Katie bought me a smoker for my birthday and brought it up there. smoking every night. So, of course, the fire department, father, whomever. Yeah. Wait, my daughter's idiot boyfriend was up there smoking pork shoulders all week, and then my house burns down? Okay.
Is that the math they're settling on, or is that what you cannot talk about?
I'm not going to incriminate myself any further, but I will say this. I'm not a fucking idiot. Well, like, it's not like I was like...
At least you don't have any money to offer or a dad to talk to for advice.
Oh, my God.
It's like that classic, I don't know if things could get any worse. Hey, Katie, your dad's house is on fire.
Mama's got the Christmas spirit.
What's she doing down in the basement?
Went after apples. Decided to make her applesauce cake after all.
Well, she told me she didn't have enough sugar.
She claims she's going to buy sugar.
It's her money.
Well, it wouldn't be Christmas without Libby's applesauce cake.
Puts too much nutmeg in it for my taste.
Rotting elk, you know, at the base of that mountain.
I reckon that makes sense.
In 2012, a story surfaced from a former National Guardsman who maintained that he was actually on site when at least some of the Bigfoot recoveries occurred under cover of extensive secrecy. Incredibly, he claimed that not all of the retrieved Bigfoot were dead. Some were burned and injured, and a few were dead. Get this. He also claimed that the military had assistance from one or two of the unharmed Bigfoot that helped guide the military personnel to the site where the other injured Bigfoot lay. So what he's saying, this National Guardsman says that he saw a bunch of dead Bigfoot, but he also saw one or two. And there's a couple of stories that imply this, that some of the military dudes were communicating with one or two live Bigfoot. So, and those Bigfoot were taking them deep into the mountain in the areas where other Bigfoot were.
In the midst of the tragedy, like, all right, I guess we'll get along with it. But the Bigfoot's like, all right, listen, shit's rough right now. Yeah, I'm real.
Seriously, there's some stories. There was one I was reading where this guy
turns out people don't realize that Chupacabra is one of the first responders during 9/11. When a national tragedy hits, all the cryptids, they get over it. They realize, listen, we got to come together as a community.
Get this. All right, there's this one story where the guys,
you don't realize that during Katrina, so many Mothmen were there.
This guy says that he showed up. He was summoned to go help with this tragedy. And this one guy was talking about, this National Guardsman, said he showed up to kind of the base camp. And there's a bunch of National Guardsmen up there, and they're all working. And there was a big tent set up, right? Mm-hmm. And then the head honcho of this project came out of the tent, and following the commander was a Bigfoot who was in the tent. Like they had a meeting in this tent. So the commander comes out of the tent, and followed by a 7.5 foot tall Sasquatch, and the commander and the Bigfoot, I'm not making this up, I mean, this could be total
somebody
bullshit.
Is
the commander and the Bigfoot got into a truck or a Jeep and drove off, and they were communicating. The commander was speaking in weird, some sort of, they were somehow verbally communicating.
Bigfoot is like, all right, yeah, let me just get in the car. Like, Bigfoot opened the door to a car.
They say he got in the back.
Bigfoot moved the seat back because he knew. Bigfoot is like, what is this, a Suburban? No, it's got the lever under the front of the seat. God damn it, man.
He hit his head. Ugh. He was trying to get in.
His head's out the sunroof. Real cartoon.
Where's John, Olivia? I've been expecting him by to do his Christmas shopping.
Well, John's not home yet, I.
Oh, he'll be along. John Walton would no more stay away from home on a Christmas Eve than fly to the moon.
Hell, I know you'll get here if you can. It's just that 50 miles on slippery roads and then that long walk home from the bus. It's a lot of ground to cover. But I didn't mean to tell you my troubles, Zach. I've come for some sugar.
And but she has since, when I got back, while we were on tour together, she went out and got a king-size bed.
And, oh, she won King's.
Yeah, baby. And now I don't have any excuses. So she's she's making me sleep with her.
I mean, a king size bed, though.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But
she don't gotta worry about nothing.
But she didn't get the box spring, so she's got the box spring from the old full. And she,
I was gonna say, she's just doing that bachelor shit where she's got the. Oh, she's got, at least she's got a box spring. Yeah, you're just gonna ruin your new mattress.
Yeah, and well, she's
just
gonna
put the mattress on the ground like a cool college dude.
So she's got this overlap and then or underlap rather, and so she slid some boxes and books and stuff.
No,
but it's pretty cool. But
just put it on the ground like a date rape.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, no more couch for me. You know, they all say, oh, I'm sleeping on the couch tonight. Even before this, I was always like, that's not so bad. The TV's out there. And yeah.
I always thought, and the idea of getting rest. Like, yeah, you can Brady Bunch that shit. Like, and the idea that rest will make you both happier people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My parents haven't slept in the same room for years. That's a different situation.
But yeah, and then she gives me shit about. I don't want to sound like I'm complaining. She's a great gal. We're doing great. But she
here we go. Give me some dirt.
She complained
baby.
That I didn't. She complained I didn't sleep in the bed with her. But then also, you ever get this? Like, you don't like to snuggle. And like, okay.
No, because I love to snuggle.
I'll cuddle you. You know, if that's what you need.
I love me a little cuddling, buddy.
Here's the thing. When it's time to sleep, though, I can't snuggle or cuddle or nuzzle or whatever the fuck you want to call it. I can't do that.
It's called intimacy, Dave.
Well, I just can't do it. Mm-hmm. I can't do that and try to fall asleep. Like, seriously, we're supposed to spoon each other and then fall asleep? Like, that's some TV shit.
No, man, it's called love.
No.
It's called love, Dave.
No, well... And I never have been able to do that. It's like when it's time to sleep, get the fuck off me. Don't touch me.
Wow. All right. Well, I was going to Dr. Drew this episode, Dave, but is it a...
No, but seriously, like...
No, I know what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, if we're hanging out... Night, you're not going to sweat all over each other.
Yeah. If we're hanging out on the couch, watching a movie, all right, I'll give you a little bit of that action. But like when it's time to sleep...
I'll give you a little
I
bit
need
of
my
action.
Space... I don't, you know, just get away from me. We don't need to be breathing into each other's faces all night and flailing around. Just you stay over there, I'll stay over here. Or preferably, I'll be on the couch. But now I don't have any excuses.
Yeah, man, I just... right when you just fall asleep where you fall asleep.
Mm-hmm. Man, my dream is to have that Warden June Cleaver set up. You know, same room is fine, but two different beds.
Maybe even the Waltons.
Yeah, the Waltons probably had that. Frank and Estelle Costanza.
Some real models. Yeah. Real relationship goals you're looking for in the world here.
Oh, man. But, yeah, so, you know, got a new bed, and I'm having to adapt to...
King size, baby. It's great stuff, man.
Not only sleeping indoors, but in an actual bed. No bed, no mattress in the old van. In the mini, I had the mattress in the big white van.
You didn't have a mattress in this old one?
No, man.
What were you doing?
Just had like five of those egg foam crates.
Oh, like and the yoga
then
mats?
Yeah, and then I slid those into a sleeping bag and had a little makeshift mat. But yeah, it was too small. Couldn't fashion a mattress in that thing.
What is this? So sad.
Oh, no. Nah, it was good times. Didn't have to cuddle with anybody, though.
Yeah, you didn't have to cuddle with anybody. Lucky you.
Yeah.
Boy, poor Dave's got to cuddle.
Now I got to snuggle and cuddle and do all that shit.
Yeah, man. It's great. I love it. What else
going on? Johnny, would you like a cup of coffee or something?
No, I can't stay but a minute, Olivia. But I did know that John wouldn't have a chance to do much hunting this Christmas, so I thought he'd appreciate a little meat on the table.
Oh, Charlie. I don't know how to thank you.
You don't have to say nothing to me, Olivia.
Oh, this is the answer to my prayer.
Fine bird, all right. Where'd he come from?
I shot him up on Wales Mountain.
Don't appear to be no wild turkey to me. Never saw a wild turkey this clean. What kind of shot you use?
Didn't. Got him clean through the head with a single bullet.
A sitting still bird? You shot a sitting still bird?
He's very OCD.
Derek, you ever seen a ghost?
I'm pretty sure my mom has a ghost that just moved around with her from place to place. Just her, like, her buddy. It probably is a demon. It's probably a demon that my mom summoned. I lived with her until I was, like, I moved out when I was 14, and then I moved back for a couple months when I was 17, and she had a little spare bedroom that I was crashing in, and I already didn't feel welcome there. We weren't getting along, and I was a shitty son to begin with at that point. So
things weren't going great when you moved out at 14.
14, yeah. Thanks for.
What's that the wasn't backstory
even
the, there?
That was even the peak. That was just let's get this party started.
She didn't and, like all your shredding.
Oh yeah, no. Her and my dad, my stepfather, got divorced, and I was like, I couldn't deal with either of them, so I just moved out and got a job and lied about my age and sold carpet.
Weird story.
I had a suit and everything. I sold carpet in Nielsen Brothers.
You were a child carpet salesman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was 14 years
Who
old.
Could
I was
say no to you.
I had the cutest little face. I sold so much Berber.
Where did you live? Where did you live at 14 on your own?
Oh, man. Okay, so I got a place through the Little Nickel Want Ads. Had a listing for an apartment manager, and you got free rent. So I showed up, and I figured if I lied about my age to get this job, I'm going to lie about my age to get this job. And I told the lady that I was super responsible, and the job was an apartment manager. The job was, I'm not kidding, by the way, if it was okay with me, she needs someone to live with her adult son, who's a level 3 registered sex offender, and she wants to make sure that he doesn't leave the apartment. So I became the roommate of a pedophile at 14. And
he made it to level 3?
Fuck. You became the dine-in felony for this guy. We can't have him going for takeout anymore, so I got you one off the streets.
Oh, my God. And I didn't, like, that guy was into way younger kids, so I felt safe. And,
man... 14's a little long in the tooth for that guy.
So that was 14. And then...
You seeing a ghost is the least interesting part of the story.
Yeah.
How long did you live with that dude?
2.5 years, almost.
Wow.
Yeah. Until I quit high school.
Any experiences?
No. In fact, he had a little black and white.
Did he get to level 4?
He was so mad at me. He hated me so much because he wanted to fuck kids so bad, and I was always home. And so he would just sit in front of his TV and Shane smoke Newports, watching his little black white TV when I came home and be like, "Hey, Jane." He's like, that's the noise he would make, and I'm like, "Oh, you want to fuck a kid so bad?" But
how old was
like,
he?
Bruno, he was like 33.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. But he had no I got
ghosts
free rent,
you saw
right?
Were
I
mean, alive.
I'm more scared of that than any ghost I've ever heard of.
Yeah, I mean, now that you guys put it in perspective, I should have been a lot more scared. But I was selling a fuck ton of carpet and living rent free. I mean, I'm surprised I didn't start doing coke, which I should have.
John, boy, you run on home and tell your daddy to fix him in, will you?
My daddy ain't home yet.
Now, something is really wrong if John ain't got in by now.
Yeah, I know. Mama sent me down here hoping you'd take me over to Charlottesville, see if we could find him. She can give me a dollar for the gas.
Oh, well. Hey, listen. The keys to my car in this pocket right over here. Now, you take him and drive that boy on over town, will you?
Oh, Charlie, you know I can't do that until the law finishes this pool game.
John Boy, you know how to drive?
Oh, well, Daddy used to let me drive that old DeSoto he used to have.
Well, that's good enough here. Keys right in my pocket. Go ahead and take them.
All right. Charlie, you can't let this boy drive halfway across the county with a carload full of stolen goods.
You leave that up to the boy. If he wants to take the chance, the car's his.
Appreciate it, Charlie.
Let's talk about your face.
I do look like a gay leather daddy.
Last episode, you talked about how gay guys think you're a bear, and then you're like, "Well, guys, listen,
I'm just giving them
no
what
offense,
they want,
but I'm not."
Yeah.
And now here you are throwing a lot of mixed messages out there, Dave.
This was an accident, man.
That is a beard that is built for speed.
I've been rocking this beard for 13 years. Never shaved it.
Yeah.
Never shaved the beard. I shaved the mustache one time, and I look like an Amish dude.
Yeah, I've thought about it. That wouldn't work.
But I was just trying to. I like to keep it like tight around the sideburns and cheeks, yeah, and then let it grow out around the chin. And I was trying to trim it up the other day, and I've got one of those clippers where it's just one guard, and then that guard has six different positions.
Yeah, I would never trust that.
And I had it on like the. I usually keep it around three or four. And while I was trying to line it up, I guess I pressed a little too hard, and it went from four down to one. And just, man,
I've had it where I've knocked the guard off, and yeah, just put a divot. But it's been like, oh, I was cutting my hair at a three, and it looks like I'm just cutting. And that's when I had a little bit of hair left. Now it's like, just take it down.
Yeah, this looked like, I mean, I carved it. It looked like the old-timey baseball field, the little dirt trail between the pitcher's mound and home plate, and there's grass around it, but yeah, a little strip.
The walking, the runway.
Yeah, so really butchered it. So now, basically, what I've got to describe to the listener is I've got the Robert De Niro from Jackknife. If anybody remembers the movie Jackknife, where he just had
I'm going to look up
the super wide goatee. It's like a wide ass goatee.
It looks so dumb. Let me see. De Niro.
It looks so dumb.
Jackknife.
He may have rocked it also in The Deer Hunter, but I'm pretty sure Jackknife, where he's got like a Boston Red Sox cap and then this giant goatee.
Oh, yeah. It's actually just a beard that doesn't connect.
Yeah. It's essentially like everything is normal, but there's about 2 inches missing where my sideburns should be.
Yeah, you look like what was the 80s villain Superman? So was it Superman 2? That had Zod. Who were the big mean dudes?
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
And the old one.
Uh-huh.
Not this new one. I don't know. Oh, this is
what I know exactly about. Who you're talking about.
The old one. I don't know. But yeah. I'm not going to try and come up with Superman shit.
Yeah, I look real dumb.
Yeah, man.
What are you going to do?
I'm surprised you didn't just go to the goatee.
I don't know. That's, yeah, I thought about it. I thought about just doing the goatee.
Just bring it. That's the stage when you have a beard and you shave it off. It always goes to goatee, and then it goes to Hulkamania, and then it goes all the way off.
Hulkamania.
How long have you had the beard for?
13 years. Yeah.
13?
13 years, never shaved.
Shit, man, I'm at 11.
Yeah.
But I'll shave once in a while just to surprise him.
I've never shaved it.
Just to surprise him.
Is Daddy home?
Not yet. Who was that let you off down at the gate?
Well, it was Miss Mamie and Miss Emily Baldwin. They give me a ride home in their pappy sleigh.
We thought it was Santa Claus.
What am I gonna do with you, boy? I send you looking for your daddy, and you end up joyriding with two old lady bootleggers.
I wasn't joyriding, Mama. Well, they took me to look for Daddy. We got right far, but there's a tree down in the road stopped us dead.
What's that you got in your hand?
It's a present, Mama, from Miss Mamie and Miss Emily.
Bootleg whiskey. Don't those crazy old women know I don't allow whiskey in this house? I've got young children in this house. What sort of example do they think we set here? You take it out yonder and pour it on the ground.
Mama. It's not whiskey, Mama. It's eggnog.
How much charcoal I could get for $2,000?
Don't bring up things that have been burnt.
That's true. That's true.
Anybody not know anything? Follow up with that? Anybody not know the inside track? Dave burnt down his girlfriend's dad's cabin. They're cheering.
I admit to nothing.
Well, you
it's
did.
Not like
no,
I
you
was
already
like...
did. You admitted to all of it, and then I told you to shut up.
I didn't admit to shit. I just said, it's not like I was like, thanks for letting me borrow your cabin. Fuck off, cigarette butt. Peace out.
I mean, all I did was put my charcoal chimney on the railing, and I burnt that a little bit, but it wasn't like it was the whole...
Those were separate incidents, Kyle.
Oh, man. Well... That nothing got resolved out of. Did you not want me to bring it up?
I'm not at liberty.
Because you told it to me when we were recording at home at like not in front of people, but now we're faced with a crowd.
I didn't admit to anything. I just said that I was there, and then when I left, the place burned down. I don't know. How was Florida, Kyle? Let's change the subject.
Florida's fun. Okay, I got racially profiled, but as a racist. I was at a bar in Ybor City. I don't know if anybody's been to Ybor City. It's like, you know how there's... Ybor City is like the Florida of Florida. It's like, oh, you don't think we can turn the dial up a little bit? You don't think we're Florida enough? Welcome to Ybor City. It's spelled Y-B-O-R like nothing else in the world. Fucking how about that? Like, that's a town that was just like, how about these letters? Like, that whole place was named like it was like a shitty Scrabble game. And then a guy sidled up to me. A guy, like, it was like 6 o'clock I was at a bar. And this guy was drunk like it was 11 o'clock. Like work from home drunk. Like, you forgot that everybody else had a day. And now they're just being social. But this guy's like, no, I'm getting bottomed out. Fireball shots. No, man, eat some rice or something. Like, have a meal.
Yeah.
And then he scooted.
How old was this guy?
I'm gonna put him late 20s. I put everybody at late 20s.
Okay. What?
I don't know. That's my blind spot. How old?
If you had to guess his employment,
blue collar. I know his employment because he told me unsolicited. I do 3D imaging. I'm like, that sounds interesting. He's like, yeah, I work for Aaron Furniture and I do their website. So if you want to get a couch, I can make it look like it's in your house.
That's pretty cool.
No, it's not.
Rental furniture.
And then he scooted over to me. He's like, you seem cool, which if you want to win over a comedian, just say that. That's all we want to be. That's why we do this. It's desperation. You seem cool. Really? Tell me how. That wins me over every time. You seem cool. How did you guess? Anyway, go on. And then he just goes, you know what I hate about Tampa? I was like, oh, man, what's what? The humidity? Come on. He goes, black people. I was like, oh, I didn't want to be that kind of cool.
To a complete stranger, that was his icebreaker.
Admittedly, I'm wearing a Bass Pro Shops hat. But that shouldn't be like the open up after a minute and a half about your hatred of another race. And that was, yeah, that was I told him to sit back in the chair that he came from, and our conversation was done.
You tough talked him?
Yeah, that was my punch at Nazi was, sir, I believe we're finished here. I don't think he was straight out like white supremacist trying to recruit. I think he was just a guy trying to, just a drunk guy. It's like, let's just have a free flow of drunken ideas. And then I was like, man, wrong ideas. And then I told the bartender, like, what did he say? I'm like, I said, he hates black people. He's like, that's weird. He dates a black girl. I'm like, well, that's a different scenario altogether. Yeah. You don't hate black people. You're just bad at relationships. Anyway, that was Tuesday in Florida.
Look who's home.
It's Daddy.
Where in the world were you, John?
Well, the last bus out of town ran into an accident.
Oh, I heard. I just knew you were on it.
Well, no, I wasn't on it, but I was stuck over there. Well, thank you, John boy. I didn't see any point to spending Christmas in a bus station, so I started hitchhiking. I must have spent half the day out there on that road with my thumb up in the air. Got as far as Hickory Creek before dark, and from then on, it was every step along the way by foot.
What's in that sack, Daddy?
Well, now, doggone if I know, Ben. Why don't we just dump it out and have a look?
You must spend every cent of your paycheck.
Just about.
John, what are we going to live on this coming week?
Love,
woman. Love, woman. There you go, man. The Waltons' Christmas, the homecoming. That's for Kyle. That's on YouTube right now if you want to watch that for free. Terrific, wholesome family Christmas movie. There you go, guys. That's it. Best of the Boogie Monster Christmas edition. Thanks for hanging out and listening. A couple quick shout-outs. I want to give a shout-out to Valerie Green, our subreddit creator, celebrating her 33rd birthday on the 29th of December. She'll be 8.5 months pregnant. So, yeah. Congrats. Happy birthday, Valerie Green. Reddit.com/boogiemonster if you want to get on there and poke around. Also, shout-out to Sean Duffy, listener in Waleska, Georgia, where I grew up. Sean, a student at Reinhardt University. So, thanks for listening, Sean. Guys, taking a few weeks off coming up. I want to give you a heads up. I think we're going to take 3 weeks off. We've had a crazy couple of weeks with Kyle traveling all over. We got the holidays. So we didn't want to just phone it in and record stuff like 8 weeks in advance. So we're going to take 3 weeks off. We are going to air the bonus Q&A episodes, the special Patreon-only bonus Q&A episodes. So we'll play a few of those 2 or 3 weeks. We'll probably be back on January 22nd. So yeah, man, enjoy those, and we'll take a nice little breather. Patreon.com/boogiemonster. If you're not already a patron, get on there. $4 a month, you get those special Q&A episodes, and you get a monthly episode of Dave's Kitchen. And the one up right now, our buddy Ryan Singer teaches us how to make eggnog. So get on over to Dave's Kitchen on the Patreon page. And yeah, man, support the Boogie Monster. We appreciate the help. And all right, guys, real quick, a bonus clip here. I was going to wrap up the show right now, but I don't know. I had a lot of requests for this. Not to bum you out, but from our July 31st episode earlier this year, a little remembrance of my late father who passed away earlier in the summer. And yeah, not trying to bum you out, but I had an overwhelming response to that episode. Tons of positive support, a lot of sincere feedback. So if you'd like to hear some of his stories, I'm going to go ahead and play that episode, or at least a chunk of that episode again. If you're not in the mood, I totally understand it, not trying to bum out your Christmas, but a lot of people were asking about that, if we ever did another Best Of to include that. So here you go. Regardless, we appreciate you guys listening. Happy holidays, and we're looking forward to more nonsense in 2019. Take it easy, guys.
Lots happened. Few months, yeah, lots man. Happened since then.
Tour started off great. Good tour.
Yeah.
And right towards the end, got the bad news. Most people probably understand what we're referring to now, you know, since I put it out there on Instagram, I think maybe Twitter. But if not, my dad passed away June 24th. And really caught everybody off guard. Always been in good health.
Yeah.
Made it to 75. He was 75 years old. Always been in good health. Never overweight. Hadn't drank or smoked. And I think he stopped when he was about 35. So 40 years of clean living.
I feel that, yeah.
Yeah. And well, you and I were talking about this off the air. For those, I've mentioned it a few times on here, but my mother is a paraplegic. She's been in a wheelchair ever since she was 21. Fell off the back of a motorcycle, broke her back when she was 21, and been in a wheelchair ever since. And just being in a wheelchair like that, she's what they call a paraplegic. She's paralyzed from the waist down. Just a whole bunch of health problems stem from that. So not to be morbid, but like they kind of groomed us our whole, me and my brother, our whole life was like, you know, with mom's illness or disability, she's, you know, she's probably not going to live to be a little old lady. So
yeah.
We always kind of had that in the back of our mind. And it was always kind of like, well, okay, you know, at some point mom will probably pass away first. And my brother and I, you know, since we've been adults for the last 20 years, we've just, that's a reoccurring conversation we've had. It's like, well, what are we going to do with dad when mom passes?
Yeah.
You know, like good sons, good children do, you want to, you know, make plans and mentally prepare and literally prepare, you know, for that kind of stuff. And so we just always assumed that mom would pass first and then dad would, and dad being in great health, I just always assumed he would be one of these cute little old 95-year-old men, you know, with his army veteran's hat and, you know, sitting at the diner complaining about politics. But so it really caught everybody off guard. Long story short, this all happened in the span of about 4 or 5 days. While I was on tour,
It was a Wednesday, actually. I was in Chicago. Went to a Cubs game.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. And actually sent, I made a little, my dad's always been a big baseball fan. So I made a little video of Wrigley Field, you know, because he'd never, he loves baseball, but he's never been. So I made him a little video and I sent it to him on Wednesday. And not knowing that that was the day he went to the doctor. He had been feeling kind of weird and he couldn't, my dad's always been like kind of a quiet, tough guy. Like, that's one thing
category. Yeah. Like, they don't, if you got problems, you keep them to yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. He's always, that's one thing I always admired about my dad. Like, he was a tough macho dude without being obnoxious about it. And not macho in the sense like he wasn't verbose, but like he was a dude.
He was a dude.
He was in the military. He was a dude. He was a man's man, but he wasn't like, he didn't have to remind you. He didn't talk.
I think
didn't
that's
run
even more
mouth.
Of a quality of being a dude is you don't have to remind people you're a dude.
He was not a loud mouth. He wasn't boisterous, but and part of that is, you know, because he was my dad, but like I always just knew at the end of the day, like, oh, dad and take care
he's
of shit.
He's gonna get handled.
Yeah. So, and he never complained. He wasn't a hypochondriac. He was, you know, and he kind of raised me that way too, especially with mom being in a wheelchair. Like, I think I got a double dose of like, oh, you don't complain unless it's really warranted. Mm-hmm. You know, someone's always got it worse. Look across the living room. Your mom, you know, she's in a wheelchair for the rest of her life. So I don't want to hear you complaining about your bum knee or you hurt your toe or
you
like
need perspective and appreciation for life.
You got the sniffles, like, you know, it was none of that. It was always just, you know, just shut up and deal with it. And so anyway, long story short, that Wednesday he went to the doctor. He'd been feeling weird and they ran some tests and they said, all right, we'll let you know when these tests come back. We'll let you know what's up. So him and my mom went out to eat. On the way home, they stopped by one of their favorite spots was Ruby Tuesday. Yeah. They love Ruby Tuesday. They love that salad
bar. They got a good salad bar.
Solid salad bar.
Not a good salad bar.
But the way mom tells the story is like as soon as the food came, they got the phone call.
Yeah.
And doctor said, you guys at home yet? And she's like, no, we're actually eating lunch. And he made it sound super urgent. He was like, well, y'all need to get back here ASAP. And like they didn't even eat their meal. They just came back directly to the hospital or the doctor. And long story short, he had blockages in his heart. His arteries were clogged, and they said that it's real bad. Like, I think they said only 30% of his heart was functioning or something. But they said it's real bad. He got a bunch of clogged arteries. We got to have surgery as soon as possible.
I wonder about bringing that kind of panic up to somebody.
Yeah.
Like, if you're already in a delicate position that they know about.
Yeah.
And then to be like, drop everything and get back to put that stress on somebody. Not criticizing either way.
Oh, yeah.
It's a curious thing to handle of like, you're in a fragile situation. We need to see you right away, but also stress can affect that situation.
Yeah. So, and this is in Milledgeville, Georgia, the doctor that they went to. My folks live in, if anybody is familiar with that really rural area of Georgia. My folks live in Worthen, Georgia, not far from Sandersville. Next biggest city is like 50 minutes away, which is Milledgeville. So that's where they would go to the doctor and stuff like that. So they sent him to a hospital in Augusta. And once he got settled in there in Augusta, which is about an hour away, then they realized, oh, crap, we don't have any surgeons here that are good enough or qualified enough to actually do this procedure. So the next day they sent him to Atlanta. Anybody knows anything about Atlanta knows that Emory Hospital is a real good hospital. So by like Friday afternoon, they got him to Atlanta and they had scheduled, he needed open heart bypass surgery, like some real serious stuff. They got it scheduled for Monday morning and family and doctors and nurses, everybody was optimistic, and it was just the question mark was, you know, as long as he can survive the surgery on Monday.
Yeah,
it's a risky surgery, but it's got a good success rate. Now he's going to have a huge long recovery, you know, once he gets out of here. But everybody was just fingers crossed for Monday's surgery, and Sunday morning he went into cardiac arrest and died. So. Didn't even dawn on me, you know. It didn't even like it was just. We all thought like, well, he's in the hospital, he's monitored. There's doctors. He's 24/7. Let's just hope Monday works out. Didn't even dawn on me that something would happen between the admittance and the surgery. So, I was in Cincinnati having a good week at Go Bananas, and woke up Sunday morning, and my brother texted me, said, please call now. And I knew exactly.
Really?
I knew what that meant. So, Pops passed away, but, you know, not to be all cliche, but that's part of life. And I guess I've been lucky. You know, I'll be 41 this week, and it's the first time I've ever had a real close experience with death. You know, I've been real fortunate that nobody close to me. I mean, both grandparents have died, but, you know, that I wasn't super close to them.
Well, you're
they were really old.
You're a dude, too, so that's why I'm worried about you. You play close to the vest.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah,
you know.
I don't know. It's been weird. It's been a weird month. Like, this is all new to me, you know. And, you know, it's something you think about all the time. It's something I've thought about for years, like we were talking about. Like, you know, when your parents get older. And, you know, I've been trying to mentally prepare myself for this. But, you know, it doesn't work. But
yeah.
But what I've been trying to do now, like in the last, since it's happened, it's been about a month now, is just find that perspective and find the silver linings. And I know a lot of people say this about family members when they die or whatever, but, like, my dad was a great dude.
Yeah.
Like, he really was. And I'm so fortunate that, and this is no hyperbole, like, I have zero negative memories of my father.
Yeah.
Zero. Now, you know, we had our ups and downs, just me being a thick-headed, dumbass teenage boy. You know, we went round and round and stuff, but nothing serious, nothing long-term. No. There was never, me and my mother had more ups and downs than my father, just because, you know, my mom's emotional and the male-female thing, me and my dad just always, we were on the same level with stuff, and I'm really fortunate that I don't have any negative memories, and I realize that, you know, a lot of people don't have that. You know, a lot of people when their dad or their mother die, you know, it's bittersweet, or it's, you know, like, oh, I'm so sad they're gone, but man, he was an asshole, or I still have all these
regrets that you didn't say what you wanted to say in the moment.
And the only regret I have is just the fact that for the past almost 7 years I've been out here and I've only got to see them about once or twice a year, you know, and not to be morbid, but like every time I go home to visit and when I'm pulling out of their driveway and there's a little part of me in the back of my brain, it's like, I hope this isn't the last time I see them.
Man, I don't see, you know, think about that too. But, but in the same way, I mean, not, and again, I don't have the perspective that you have on this stuff. Rachel talks about Rachel's mom passed away. You know, over the course of a year, but relatively quickly and unexpectedly. And like even if you were still there, if you were living in Atlanta, I mean, like my sister, when she lived in Chicago, I'd see my parents just as much with the amount of time that she'd make it out.
Yeah.
Even though it was only, 25 miles away. So, yeah, the distant thing is weird. But you were going to make your own life even if you were still in Atlanta.
Yeah. And my mom made a good point, too. It's like, you know, the last 7 years or whatever. But when I do come home to visit, they've been great visits. You know, I've been present.
Yeah, you make the most of it.
As opposed to, like, if you do live 5 miles down the road, you might take it for granted. Like, oh, good to see you, whatever.
I feel bad that maybe that's how I've been with my visits.
Yeah.
And I should be more.
But our visits have been good. And, yeah, but I mean, I'm just so fortunate that, like, seriously, I just, you know, it's hard to articulate this to someone who never met the guy, but he was just a great dude. He was just, and some of the stuff that he imparted on me, like, just some of his qualities and characteristics, like, looking back at it now, stuff I didn't notice, you know, when he was alive or whatever, but, like, one thing I loved about my dad was he just, that ability to just play it cool, just, and not playing, but just,
no, but just not bothered by stuff.
Just, hey, it's gonna work out, you know, it's gonna work. Just not too high, not too low, just even keel. And like and especially as a child, that's a great quality for your parents to have, because, you know, you want to know that, like, oh, it's just that security and that safety of, like, I couldn't imagine having, like, a dad or somebody who was just a real spaz and was always panicking and yelling and, like, but, like, my dad was always, like, the worst of times, it was always, like, we got this.
Yeah.
It's going to be cool. And,
mean, I'll go into some backstories if you don't mind. I just feel like this story needs to be heard.
Then you take however much time and however you want to do
well,
it.
Well, he just, and again, I know
celebrate Don Stoner.
I know everybody says this, but like, he really was just such a great dude and just, all right. I mean, he had a terrible childhood. All right. I'll try to just make, I won't drag this out too long, but born in 1942, he's born in Erin, Tennessee, which is kind of near the Kentucky-Tennessee line, way up in kind of northwest Tennessee.
I was looking where Warthen was.
They live in Warthen.
In the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, but boy, he loved it, by the way. And let me tell you this.
There's only one road on Google Maps.
that's the road they live on, 102.
Yeah, that's it. Warthen Road goes through Warthen. Then out of war, then.
But long story short, was born, you know, back in the 40s when into extreme poverty. Mm-hmm. So his dad was in World War II, and by all accounts was just fried from the war. Like when he came back, a lot of PTSD. I think there probably was some alcohol and just. To hear my dad say it, a good dude, but just couldn't get his shit together and be a good father.
Yeah.
So, and mother was worse. Mother bailed on them when my dad was two.
Really?
The mom bails. You hear a lot of times dad doesn't stick around. What?
I had a few friends where that was the story, was the mom took
off. Yeah, mom took off when my dad was two. And my dad had a sister who was a year older, Sonia. So anyway, long story short, his dad remarried to just apparently, to hear my dad tell the story, just a world-class asshole. This lady, just mean, would verbally and physically abuse my father and his sister. Just a real mean lady. Would send them to school with bread sandwiches, just two pieces of bread, like almost as like. To spite, just to be mean. Here's your fucking bread sandwich. And my dad was just, you know, he's 5 years old and he's trying to figure out why is my stepmom such an asshole? And why isn't my dad doing anything about it?
Yeah, yeah.
So apparently that got so bad. I don't know. He never talked in great detail about it. But something happened to where from the ages of 5 to 10, dad had to live with a revolving door of foster families.
Really?
So I don't know what happened, but his biological father and his nasty-ass stepmom were no longer in the picture from ages 5 to 10. So he got kicked around from foster family to foster family, and I think some of those weren't good. Mm-hmm. You know, he never went into great detail, but you could sometimes read between the lines that, like, I'm hoping that there wasn't any abuse, but I'm not sure. I'm not positive that there wasn't. But something happened. He was just kicked around. He used to talk about living on a turkey farm, and these people were assholes. And he lived with three or four foster families and somehow found his way.
You know, those assholes over at the turkey farm. That sounds like a euphemism.
Yeah. And somehow wound up in Detroit. So he's a 10-year-old boy. He's living in Detroit, like down, like inner city Detroit. Used to talk about just getting in fights with little black kids all the time because he was the only white kid around, and they used to chase him and try to fight him. And, you know, just a scared little 10-year-old, basically orphaned white boy in downtown Detroit. And he was living with a foster family there that I think was abusive or whatever. Hitchhiked. At 10 years old, he ran away from his foster family and hitchhiked back to Erin, Tennessee to live with his second aunt, this lady named Nora, who then raised him from ages 10 until he graduated high school, like 17. So at 10 years old, little Donnie is like, fuck this, I'm out. And he arranged, like, he patchworked some rides. He did some hitchhiking, and then some friends of the family were driving a couple hundred miles, and he hitched, you know. Anyway, over the course of a week, 10-year-old Donnie, no supervision, somehow made it from Detroit back to Erin, Tennessee. And then I think from 10 to 17, his life was fairly good. He lived with his second aunt and her husband, and just lived on a farm with a bunch of cousins and stuff, and all that worked out great. Joined the Army right after high school during Vietnam. Wasn't drafted. Signed up. Said, I'll go. Fortunately, didn't see combat. He was stationed for 3 years in Hamburg, Germany. I always thought this was an interesting story. He spent 3 years in Hamburg and used to, and Dad never, like, he was always a gentleman and, you know, never glorified any of his rowdy ways, but like,
yeah.
Whenever he would talk about Hamburg, Germany, you could tell there was like, he's like, oh, they got really good beer. Oh, the beer in Germany.
A little sparkling.
Oh, man, there's really good beer and just a lot of fun. So Lord knows what he got into over there. But one cool little thing, a little anecdote he used to talk about was he saw the Beatles multiple times live in concert before they were famous.
Oh, wait, that's where they kind of lived and were getting their shit together.
Yeah, they moved to Hamburg for like a year and did like a residency at the Cavern Club. I don't know if that was the one.
But that was like cool. They lived there and there.
Yeah,
something tells me that Don, like, I don't mean this to be disrespectful, but I picture your dad like Grandpa from The Simpsons, like Beatles were on the stage, like, what's this noise? Like, for some reason,
yeah,
seems like
even when he was 22,
yeah, I was still just like,
but yeah, he used to go see the Beatles. They were the Beatles, but they weren't the Beatles.
No, it was like they were a bar band doing this when they were doing their covers.
He used to talk about seeing them, which I thought was cool. And then after he got out of the army, moved to Nashville, and I always thought this was interesting. Like, Dad always he loved country music. He loved music in general. And when he moved back to Nashville, he really wanted to be a musician, like a songwriter, yeah, like a country music songwriter. Realized pretty quick that he just didn't have the talent for it. But he kind of bounced around in those circles. With a lot of his friends were musicians and songwriters. So he spent about 5 years as a single dude in Nashville, yeah, in his mid-20s, just kind of bounced around and being a part of that scene. Mm-hmm. And one story he used to tell, he was friends of a friend with Scotty Moore, who was Elvis's guitar player. So he told me the story 50 times growing up. So there was one night, this was probably about 65, 66, that he's hanging out with his buddy. Him and his buddies just always sit around and try to write songs and, you know, kind of almost like an open mic, or like a house full of open mic comics, you know, who are just trying
riffing, putting it all together.
Mm-hmm. So they would, he lived with a buddy, and just to hear him tell, there was a nice little clique of friends that were always in and out of this apartment, hanging out, writing songs. And a couple of those guys went on to a little bit of success, wrote some songs for some big guys or whatever. But one night, Scotty Moore comes over, who was not Elvis, his former guitar player, 1966. Yeah. Hey, I just got off a world tour.
Yeah.
Elvis is across town, whatever. So he's hanging out with Scotty Moore and a few of these other guys. And then DJ Fontana comes over, who was Elvis's drummer. So now he's sitting here.
Handle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good name. So there's like four or five of these dudes sitting around drinking beer, talking to Scotty Moore and DJ Fontana. And then apparently, the way Dad tells the story, Scotty Moore has to get up and go take a phone call, comes back, and he goes, hey guys, I think Elvis might swing by. Oh, and my dad's like, what the fuck? And the whole night they were like, yeah, Elvis is in town. He's right across the street.
Yeah.
You know, and this was prime, like, famous Elvis, 1965, 1966. But the way Scotty Moore, like, articulated it, and I can appreciate this, he's like, yeah, sometimes Elvis, you know, he likes to just hang out with some guys and not be Elvis. Just, you know, so he might come over and drink some beer and hang out with us. And the whole night everybody's sitting around with their fingers crossed. And he never came.
Oh.
But like Dad telling that story, like, of like
Santa Claus.
Yeah, like I almost got to hang out with Elvis. And I always thought that he just, you know, I mean,
yeah,
for a guy who, you know, if you're not in show business and you never had any, you know, encounters with celebrity or show business or anything, like for just a normal working class dude to like almost get to hang out with Elvis.
That's how it feels like with comedy too. Like,
yeah,
when you're like, you know, you're just a bunch of people at a show in a green room, mm-hmm, and so and so drops in. Like,
yeah.
Oh shit. Yeah. I guess Chris Rock can go on next.
Yeah. Well, it's like I told that story about hanging out with Brian Regan, and he even said, he's like, you know, now that I play theaters, I don't get to hang out with comics. So that's why I love coming and doing this shit. He came and hang out with us all night. Just like one of the dudes, you know?
So your dad understood maybe a little bit of the vagabond ways of trying to be an artist, and you gotten to get out.
He was so supportive.
So
supportive. He thought it was so cool when I started doing comedy. Whatever I was in throughout my life, as far as career wise, he then became into it. Like when I became a radio DJ in my early years, he thought that was the coolest because he wanted to be a radio DJ. He tells this long story about,
when he was 15, he almost became a radio DJ at the local station. It was him and his buddy. I forgot the guy's name, but dad was 15. His buddy was 16. They both were interested in being DJs. Yeah. They would hang around the station, harass the DJs, harass the station managers, and just they just loved that world of like being close to music and stuff. And they had an opening for a DJ, but you had to be 16. So his buddy, got it, and dad never got to be that. So when I became a DJ, he thought that was great, but he's just so supportive. And let me tell you, all right, this is kind of the meat of this story. It's just, this is a good example of what kind of dude my dad was. All right, fast forward a few years. All right, my mom, she had a previous marriage that was very short-lived. And out of that marriage came my brother Jay, who's a great dude, by the way, who's sometimes listens to the podcast. But we'll get into it a minute later, you know, as far as modern day, what Jay's doing for the family, you know, post all this stuff. But anyway, 1974... my mom hooks up with this guy. They get married. It doesn't last any time. My mom, post-wreck, by the way. So 1974, my mom, in a wheelchair, marries this dude, gets pregnant a few months after the marriage. And dude, as soon as she gets pregnant, dude said, well, I didn't need an unwanted kid and a wife in a wheelchair. I'm going to bounce.
Classy.
So this fella. Piece of shit just bolts on a 24-year-old woman in a wheelchair who is now pregnant, and Pops is like, I'm out.
That guy's got a special place in the afterlife.
So anyway, so now mom moves back in with her parents, my grandparents, my deceased grandparents. She's 24. She's been in a wheelchair for 3 years, prime of her life, and now she can never walk again. Now she's got a kid that she wanted. You know, it's neither here nor there. But now she's got a kid, and the kid's pop is bounced. So now she's in a wheelchair with a kid.
This makes that Johnny Cash autobiography look like fucking cupcakes. Jesus Christ, man.
Now get this. My dad was friends of a friend. My dad lived in Nashville. My mom lived in Atlanta. My mom was like, you know, rightfully so, super depressed during this period. Just realized she's going to spend the rest of her life in a wheelchair. Just has a kid, and she's excited about the kid, but now his dad's gone. So some friend of a friend, they drag her up. Grandma and grandpa take care of my brother for the weekend. Her friends drag her up to Nashville to hang out with some friends. She meets dad just casually as a friend. And
I wouldn't phrase it like that.
but I was absolutely, yeah. It's weird talking about folks and romance.
But. No, I'm just trying to make jokes in here.
So they drag her up.
I'm just to picture them pushing a woman in a wheelchair who doesn't want to go. It's like, well, tough shit, because we're pushing you that way.
No, but she didn't want to go, but they were like, look, you've got to get out of the house.
I know, but in my head, it's like, well, you don't have a choice because you're on wheels and we're moving you.
But so anyway, they hit it off. They start a long-distance phone call thing. They joke. The family joke was, we had to get married because we had a $600 phone bill. You know, they were talking so much on the phone that eventually, 4 months later, their courtship only lasts 4 months. This is when my dad starts to propose to her, and he explains, he's like, hey, I want to marry you. And she's like, you don't want to marry me. I'm in a wheelchair. I got a kid. You know what Don Stone says? He looks her right in the eye. He says, the only thing I want to change about you is your last name.
Ooh.
Come on.
Ooh.
That's pretty. So, this dude,
he's like, smoothest lines I've ever heard in my life.
I'm going to marry you, and I'm going to adopt him. He married my mom and adopted my brother in the same day. I don't give a fuck. Let's do it. All I want to do is change your last name. That's Don Stone right there.
That's a guy.
And
that's a
43 years later, just never spent a night apart. You know, when I was growing up, they'd have arguments and stuff here and there, but
I'm gonna cry,
not a
man.
Hint of
that's
abuse.
That's an honorable man.
All I want to change about you is your last name. He married a disabled woman in a wheelchair and adopted her son in the same day. And it's like, game on, let's go start a life. And then a couple years later, I came around.
I think you have to have kids, Dave.
But that's the kind of dude my dad was.
You got that good blood, man.
And
not a lot of that in the world anymore.
And just, I'm serious, and just a gentleman. I never heard my dad talk about women. There was never any off-color jokes, never caught him looking at women. Just a gentleman through and through, and just a great dude. Like, never, like, you know, and he's, they struggled, you know. My mom, unable to work, you know. I mean, now she could technically find some, you know, online job, but, you know, when she was, you know, this is 40 years ago, she's trying to raise two kids from a wheelchair. Just second income just wasn't a possibility.
Yeah, yeah.
So dad busting his ass his whole life. And, you know, of
what
course, we had medical bills out the ass because the mom's always had some sort of problem. He did everything, man. He, when I was little, he was into, he worked for like a collection agency for like a big corporate, like, past due stuff. Like, he's the guy, you know, not a, you know, now that I look back on it, you know, not a necessarily a job that one would want or people would deem honorable, but like, you know, he was the guy that would call people and be like, look, you're, you know, you got to pay your bills.
Well, I think about those kind of job, like prison guard or something. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's
somebody's
the job you take when you need a job.
So he did that for a while. And then, like, during my teenage years, he tried to get into that field, like, on his own. I think he had a partner, and then they started their own business. And that went well for a few years, but then, you know, something happened, and it went south. So I remember as a teenager, dad was just like Mr. Entrepreneur. Like, we did everything. Yeah. He had a firewood business. We had that for like 5 years, where he was like a firewood middleman. We delivered to barbecue restaurants. He had a big lot in our little hometown, and once a week, an 18-wheeler would come through and just drop off like 12 trees, essentially trees.
Oh, okay.
And then we'd get out there. He had a big gas-powered splitter.
Yeah.
And we'd get out there with a chainsaw and just cut that tree into 10 pieces and take those 10 pieces and put them through the splitter. And then, you know, a day later, you got, you know, 10,000 pieces of firewood.
Yeah.
And then we'd load up the truck and deliver them to barbecue restaurants. So he did that for a while. We used to sell baseball. We had a baseball card shop. I actually found our business card when I was back home going through some stuff. We had a baseball card, which I was 13, 14, and just obsessed with the baseball card. So, like, for dad to be like, hey, I think we can make some money doing this. So we had, like, the actual brick and mortar. But then on the weekends, a lot of times we'd go to festivals,
like
card shows.
Yeah.
So he did that. He had a vending machine business where, like, he supplied all the break room vending machines for all the Walmarts in North Georgia. Just the break room, not like the ones for the customers.
No, I remember that. Yeah. I remember that being a thing. Like, people, like the soda pop vending machine, like.
Yeah. So
something you don't realize as a business, like, oh yeah, somebody maintains all these.
Yeah.
And goes around, checks and stocks them all.
So just one of those guys that just, you know, whatever it takes, we're gonna, you know, wasn't overly educated. He was a smart dude, but he didn't have a big degree to fall back on.
Yeah.
But just figured out a way, you know, whatever it was. And later just got into all kind of things. And then the last job he had in the last years of his life, he worked for CSAC, which is a music publishing and licensing company. Mm-hmm. So he would call bars and stuff and be like, yo, you'll have, are you playing music? Are you playing live music, karaoke stuff? And you got to pay these annual fees and stuff. And that money goes to the songwriters. And he did that. And again, like, kind of music business adjacent. He was real proud of that
and
job.
Collection adjacent.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get the artist paid.
Yeah, yeah. He really loved that. He was always bragging about, CSAC just signed up Bob Dylan, so now I get to collect all the royalties on Bob Dylan songs and blah, blah, blah. And just, but one thing I'm so happy is he always struggled, you know, not struggled, but like just, there was never a surplus of money growing up.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I never missed a meal, obviously.
Yeah.
Never. I got to do anything and everything I wanted, so I never knew it. But later in life, you know, I learned that, like, you know, times were real lean. And he worked. I thought he was going to just be one of these guys that has to work till the day he dies.
Yeah.
And I always, you know, when I was in my 20s doing other careers in radio and stuff, I always was like, I wish I could just make enough fucking money just to let him retire. I was afraid he would never get to retire and enjoy his glory years. He was, when they moved to Worthen, they used to live in Waleska, which is about an hour north of Atlanta.
Yeah.
They moved to Worthen to cut their house payment in half and cut basically when they moved to Worthen, he was able to then retire. So the last 3 years of his life, he got to retire, and he had a garden, and he had a little buddy down the street who was a farmer. He'd go over there 3 times a week, and they'd piddle around on his tractor. But just talking to him these last few years, you could tell he was just like that relief of like, I don't have to work anymore. Like I can just. They didn't have a ton of money, but they had enough to where he didn't have to work, and he could just fart around. He was just a retiree living out in the country, messing with his garden, hanging out with his farmer buddies. They were big into the little church there. He was going to join the VFW and that made me so happy that he at least got 3 years of classic retirement.
I'm trying not to be morbid either, but like if you get to go out when things are going well to other people, it sounds tragic.
Yeah.
Like, oh, things were finally the way he wanted it. Like, but if depending on what day it is, if I adhere to like, well, when you die, it goes back to like how you were when you were before you were born. Maybe nothing's there. And so your final moments are like, oh, I did it. I did everything I wanted and I'm happy. And then you're gone. That's kind of the ultimate success story.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, I mean, it's very sad and then it's sudden and then it's, you know, and the stories you're telling about it make me well up over here because, you think about your own parents and you have them, like, oh, maybe I'm not showing my appreciation enough. But the fact, like, if he got to, happy, like, truly happy, taken away from the fact that, you know, you got to worry, you know, you're worried about your mom, I'm worried about you, everybody else around, but, we did it.
Yeah.
Full life that ends with happiness.
Yes.
Like, that's, you can't. Nobody's going to not die.
Yeah, we're all going to die.
So if the time comes when you're on an upswing,
yes,
isn't that the best possible scenario?
That makes me so happy that he went out on top, so to speak, because, 12 years ago, he could have had a heart attack in the back of a firewood truck, knowing that he had a mountain of debt hanging over his head and whatever, so they kind of got straightened out financially. He was able to just kind of take it easy in retirement. He had 3 good years of just, hey, I'm down here in this new town. I'm loving it. I got a garden. My wife's doing fine. My boys are finally doing fine. And like, I'm so glad that he went out that way.
And maybe that's the time, like, there's no right timing for it, but maybe that's the, not that it was willed or anything. That's what I remember, like, people that retire, they say sometimes that does cause it because their purpose is taken away.
Yeah.
Like, my dad's never going to not work. Like, he has to be doing something.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't know how to sit still.
Yeah.
So.
And one thing I'm so happy about, and we touched on this off the air, but, like, I've thought about this for 20, 25 years as far as like, once you become an adult and then once reality sinks in of like, oh, my parents are going to die one day. And I had a grandmother. I didn't have any grandparents on my father's side because, like I said, explain that. So my two grandparents were my mother's mom and dad. And my grandmother died when I was, she died in 2002. And she had Alzheimer's for 12 years. So for 12 years, we watched her slowly deteriorate into, I hate this word, like, not to be derogatory, but a vegetable. Like, she just, mentally, she was a vegetable by the time she died. And we'd go visit her, at the end, she was in a nursing home. And I used to think, like, oh, God, I hope I never have to rot away in a nursing home. And more importantly, I hope my family and people I love, I couldn't imagine my mother or father just rotting away in a nursing home. And one of my biggest fears was always like, when I was 20, I used to think like, what happens when I'm 40 and mom or dad's in a nursing home and I can't really afford to put them in a better one, or I can't, just that oh, the thought of your parents just, and I'm so sorry for anybody listening who has experienced that, but like, I'm so grateful that like, even though it was sudden and it caught everybody off guard, at least, you know, it wasn't a cancer thing that took forever. It wasn't an Alzheimer's. There was no hospice. There was no, it was just like literally Wednesday, I thought everything was great, and Sunday he was dead. So, and it's heartbreaking as that was, and as swift and unexpected as that was, at least I can think, well, at least he didn't wither away.
Well, yeah. I mean, on top of all that stuff, though, I mean, you're holding up. I mean, you're a dude, too. You know that? Dudes don't show emotions a lot.
Well, we talked about, you asked me recently, when's the last time I cried? Well, that box has been checked.
Okay. So.
Well. I've had some good cries, and just that journey home, you know, across the country, three or four days of just nut by yourself, just with your own thoughts.
Oh, Katie didn't drive back with you?
No, Katie flew out for the funeral and flew back.
That's good. I'm glad you
yeah, so
she was there.
And she was, it was so great to have her around, you know, just because it was such a, that week was so tough. Yeah. And, but just... but a nice funeral, and oh man, they played one of his favorite. You may not know this artist. Vince Gill was this huge big country guy in the 80s. And one of my dad's favorite songs was Go Rest High on That Mountain. Mom and dad mom is still, and dad was, they were very religious. So, you know, they were still very connected to spirituality and the religious world. And, that song obviously has a religious connotation, but they played that at the funeral, and that song's a tearjerker.
Music will just make me cry if it's good, and then with the situation,
with no context, that's a sad song. But like having to hear that at the funeral, it was just like, good Lord. But nice little funeral, and you know, nice service and everything. Let me tell one more quick apropos
of nothing. Tell whatever you want to tell, man.
That's just popped in my mind. It doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about.
Tell what you want to tell, man.
My brother reminded me of this story. If you'd have seen this. Just, I don't know, the comedic twist in this was so funny. All right. 1992, me and my brother living at home. We're in high school, and both of us huge Atlanta Braves fans. And any Braves fans will remember that Braves sucked forever, all throughout the 70s and 80s. Braves were terrible. 1991, they turned it around, went to the World Series, didn't win, but turned it, you know, so now we're good. Next year, 1992, it's the National League Championship Series. They're playing the Pirates, and baseball fans and Braves fans will know exactly what I'm about to talk about. But Game 7. Winner goes to the World Series.
Yeah.
Game 7, the Braves have been down the whole game. It's like, oh, shit, we're going to lose this game. Bottom of the ninth, we're down by one, bases loaded, two outs. So we need one run to tie. We need two runs to win. It's like 11:30 at night. Mm-hmm. It's like a Monday night. My dad's got to go to work the next morning, so him and mom are asleep. It's 11:30 at night. Me and Jay, my brother, are in the living room watching the big TV. Braves win the game. Bottom of the ninth, two outs. Some no-name player that wasn't even on the roster at the beginning of the year gets a base hit. Guy on third scores. Guy on second is this guy named Sid Bream, who might as well have been 75 years old. Just banged up knees, way past his prime.
Last go at it.
Yeah, and like he starts running, and he rounds third, and I'm like, oh, shit, he's going to be out by a mile. Guy throws it. Sid Bream's just chugga.
Yeah.
Slides safe. Braves going to the World Series. Me and Jay lose our shit.
Yeah.
We're jumping up and down, just losing our shit. Oh, my God. Just making all kinds of racket, hugging each other, yelling. Well, then down the hall comes my dad, who was dead asleep in nothing but his tidy whities. Uh-huh. No shirt, no nothing, just his old man briefs. He comes down the hall just pissed.
Yeah.
It's like, what are y'all doing? It's 11:30. What is all this racket? I gotta go to work in the morning.
Yeah.
And me and Jay go, Dad, the Braves are going to the World Series. And he immediately went from rage to jubilation. Like once it sunk into what? And then he starts, we're all three jumping up and down. We're like that, just all three, like a just holding each other, jumping up and down. And to see like within a split second of what the hell.
hell are you idiots? Do we did what? Oh my God.
It immediately.
It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And just the joy. Because when he came down the hall, he was so pissed. And then he's like, you could just see it sinking. We did what? They're going, oh my God. Okay. Yeah. And all three of us just jumping up and down in the living room. That just one of the funniest things I've ever witnessed my dad do. Man. So yeah, good dude, old Don Stone. You know, there's a ton of stories, but those are
rough
just,
start and then made it count.
Yeah, yeah, and
got just, a good run out of it without, regardless of how yeah. it
and,
started out. Was like, no, not gonna get me.
Yeah, and for 43 years, took care of a disabled woman, mm-hmm. just every need she ever had. Just mm-hmm. you know. It's like, yeah, no, just, I got it. Like, and just that trait, that characteristic, I think, and that's something I probably value that more than anything that he handed down of just, and not that I'm perfect yeah. and not that I'm, you know, I'm like everybody, we all deal with our own shit, but just
yeah.
that ability to be like, take a deep breath. It's going to be all right.
Yeah.
You know, and
world's not ending.
Yeah, the world's not ending. And but also not just blind, stupid, it's gonna be all right. It's like, all right, how are we gonna fix this?
Yeah, yeah.
It's rather than just wish it away.
Yeah.
He was a get shit done type of dude.
Yeah, you're not putting your head in the sand waiting yeah. for it to go in.
Mm-hmm. Just a great dude, man.
Well, so. I think you got that handed down to you.
The Boogie Monster.
Thank you.